Hello and welcome to The Powerful Patient. I'm Joyce Graff and we're delighted to have you with us today. Today we're going to talk about what you need to say to a first responder, to an ambulance, the ambulance personnel or the people in an emergency room, and how do you communicate that if you're in a situation where you can't speak for yourself, you're unconscious or something else. So what is it you need to tell them about your condition? And particularly for those of us with more complex medical conditions, this is a very urgent need. About a year ago, we spoke with Rod Brohard, who is himself a paramedic, and got his perspective on the issue. And this time, we're going to speak with Jody Levine, the president and CEO of a company called EmergentTag that has a product and a particular perspective on the issue that they would like to share with you. So we're going to do that as soon as we've had a message from our sponsor, the VHL Family Alliance, which brings you this show as a public service. So we hope that you'll stay with us and talk to Jody right after this message. Thank you.
This is Keith Richards, a.k.a. Just Saying. Is there cancer in your family? There is in mine. But it doesn't have to be bad. We can take action to protect ourselves. I've learned how to get screened and manage my health so that I'll live a long, healthy life. How about you? Visit www.powerfulpatient.org. Again, that's www.powerfulpatient.org. Peace.
So tell me a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm a former hospital administrator, and I've been involved in healthcare management from multiple angles for over 20 years.
Uh-huh.
And I have always had an interest, an entrepreneurial kind of bent,
mm-hmm.
and got to a point in my life where professional experience and personal experience kind of converged. And out of that came EmergentTag.
Aha. So tell me a little about the personal experience that you that brought you to this place.
My brother and I have an older brother who lives on the West Coast, and he and I became caregivers for our parents who were living in South Florida. They had retired and moved down there, and as they aged, they became rather frail and had many, many medical conditions. So we had the experience for several years of trying to be long-distance caregivers to our parents who mm-hmm. were at very high risk for medical emergencies, and both had been in ambulances and emergency hospitalizations multiple times during their last few years. So we had that experience together, and my brother is a heart attack survivor, and I am a breast cancer survivor, and I also had an unfortunate bout of atrial fibrillation, an arrhythmia that was not controllable for many years, and I was really in bad shape with that and had blackouts, and it really made me, when I was otherwise young and healthy, rather sickly. And so I underwent two cardiac catheterizations to get that fixed. And again, had multiple emergency room visits and have had way too many interactions with the medical community from the patient standpoint. And as given my professional experience, I've really had my hands in healthcare for a very long time and understand it from multiple angles.
So you know the challenges of trying to communicate with the first responders in an efficient way, in a way that's going to benefit one's health.
Absolutely. And I also know the challenge of knowing that you have a loved one who's at risk who may not be able to communicate to a first responder when you can't be there.
Right, right. So part of this, and this is a scenario that's more and more common, the adult children of aging parents who may or may not be in the same town. But even if you are in the same town, you're not immediately in the same room with your parents. But particularly when your parents are in Florida and you're in Chicago and California, this is a particular challenge because you know you're potentially hours away from them rather than 20 minutes away.
Exactly. People are living longer. They have, you know, the average individual over the age of 65 has multiple chronic conditions. The good news about that, about living longer with all those chronic conditions, is that folks are, you know, having active retirements, and they go out and they play bridge, or they go bowling, or they play golf, or they're still out and about even though they may have congestive heart failure, or they may have breathing difficulties. You see more and more people walking around with oxygen tanks. They may have, you know, issues with blood pressure or circulation, but they're still out and about. They're remaining active well into their 80s, which is a great thing, but it also means that, you know, when something bad happens, they may not be at home.
Right.
And they may be on their own, or they may be in a place where they're not with somebody who knows them well and knows what their medical situation is. Mm-hmm. And that gets scarier and scarier as folks age.
From some of the conversations I've had before with paramedics and all, it sounds like there are two sorts of things that all of us need to think about. If you have some condition that might render you unconscious or might put you in a situation where you would need to call an ambulance, what is it that you would need those people to know first about your condition? For example, if you have diabetes and your sugar might be out of whack, they need to know that right away because that's something that they can do something about even in the ambulance or even before they put you in the ambulance, if they know it. So there's that first tier information. And then the second challenge is if you are in an accident and you're unable to speak for yourself, what is it that you need people to know about your condition because otherwise they might not treat you appropriately?
I think one of the most, and I'm not a clinician, but I've certainly worked with hundreds of them, and we also worked with many of them in designing EmergentTag and the data that it contains. One of the most important pieces of information that anybody needs to have on them is a medication list. The likelihood of a medication error in a hospital, even if you're fully conscious, is unfortunately quite high because of human error and just because of the number of drugs on the market, and many of them sound alike, many of them look alike, and we still have humans be making decisions about medications and administering them. So medication errors is just a huge problem across the industry. Certainly if you're unconscious or your ability to communicate is diminished or you're confused, then you can't tell the providers what medications you're on, the probability of that medication error gets much greater.
Mm.
And in my discussions with emergency room physicians, nurses, paramedics, that's something that they're extremely concerned about because without that information, they're kind of working in the dark. And they understand the level of risk associated with giving somebody a drug that might interact with something else they're taking. As a matter of fact, one of the primary reasons for senior citizens to wind up in the emergency room in the first place is that the drugs they're on are interacting with each other.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that they're prescribed by their miscellaneous physicians are just interacting with each other and doing bad things to their state of health. So
right.
Those drugs need to be managed very closely. So that medication list is really essential.
Right, and one thing that I've heard is that even if you do go to multiple physicians, and a lot of people do, especially those of us who need more than one specialist to help manage our condition, if you at least go to one pharmacy, then one tier of errors might get picked up by the pharmacist. So if there are two things that are prescribed that are known not to get along with each other, hopefully the pharmacist will flag that.
Right. What's interesting is that, again, in my research and just in my professional experience, I've had an opportunity to speak with two of the country's largest pharmacy retailers, and both of them confirmed that most of their customers do not keep all of their prescriptions with them. So most people split their prescriptions. They might have some at the neighborhood pharmacy. They may go to a warehouse club for others because it's much less expensive. Mm-hmm. They might go to the pharmacy at the hospital if that's convenient. So it's very difficult for physicians to have a full, and the pharmacy, to have a full picture of the drugs that you're taking.
Yeah, you know, that's interesting because, you know, I'm the one who just said we ought to do that. And as you were speaking, I realized I split it too because my the medications that I take every day, I have with the mail-in pharmacy, but if I go because I have a cold and I need to pick up a prescription, I will go locally. I'm not going to phone that into the long-distance pharmacy. So you're right. We're all splitting that, and I didn't even realize it.
Yeah, and furthermore, what I've found personally and otherwise is that even if you're perfectly healthy and feeling great and you're just going to the doctor for a checkup or and you're asked what meds you're on, what medications you're on, both prescription and non-prescription, because remember, lots of people take lots of supplements these days.
Right.
And those are really important to communicate to a first responder as well, because even the fact that you take a baby aspirin every day is something important for them to know. But there are lots of herbal supplements and vitamins that, taken in certain quantities, can really impact the efficacy of prescription drugs, et cetera. But what I was going to say is that even on a good day, when you're feeling great and you're reasonably healthy and completely coherent, sometimes it's hard to remember everything you take every day.
Right.
Especially if, you know, I mean, I'm a pretty healthy person at this point, thank goodness, but I take a handful of pills every day.
Right.
And if somebody asked me to just, you know, just list off exactly what I take, I'd probably have to think about it for a while.
Right, and I do have a list with me, but of course it's on my BlackBerry, so it's not on something that a first responder is likely to find. One of the medical professionals the other day asked me if I was taking any blood thinners, and I didn't even think about the baby aspirin, but the baby aspirin is a blood thinner. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself later, that wasn't the smartest way to phrase that, because, you know, I'm probably smarter than your average pill taker. And it took a minute for me to realize the connection there. And I think not everybody is going to think of an aspirin as a blood thinner.
Right. And I think that people who take, who might use inhalers on a daily basis or medications that are administered nasally, they might not actually think of that as medicine.
Right.
It's just part of their daily routine.
Right.
But it is. And
it
that's
is
important
indeed.
Information.
Right, and the reason that blood thinners are important, of course, is that if you're wounded in an accident, it's going to affect your ability to clot. And so the clotting time becomes a factor for a first responder. And if he knows that you're an aspirin, then he would take some special measures. Or if if you're on Coumadin, it's even more critical.
Absolutely. Coumadin is a very, very helpful drug and can be very dangerous. Especially when there is a blunt injury, like somebody bangs their head or somebody's in a car accident, and they may not be bleeding externally, but the likelihood that you're bleeding internally is increased dramatically if you're a Coumadin user or if you take aspirin on a regular basis.
And warfarin's another name for that, right?
Correct.
Right. So if this sounds like something that your average person is not going to be able to do by themselves. To figure out what needs to be communicated, sounds like you have to have a conversation with your doctor about that.
I think that's a very good idea for your especially because it's so customized, it's so personal.
Mm-hmm.
What about you, a first responder would need to know, given your situation? You know, we've been talking about a lot of common conditions and a lot of common medications. There are a lot of people walking around out there who have unusual conditions.
Right.
Such that even if they communicated to a first responder, I have blah, blah, blah condition, the first responder may not even know about it.
Right. I mean, what prompted me to do this research in the first place was a question I had from one of my listeners. He said, I have von Hippel-Lindau disease, and I'm thinking, what should I put on an emergency bracelet? Should I put, I have von Hippel-Lindau disease? Well, your average first responder is not going to understand the implications of that. They may not even know what it is. And the emergency room doctor might not remember more than a paragraph from medical school. So what we really need them to know is, what is it about that condition that might influence what they need to do to help you out in that emergency situation?
Exactly right. And that's why when we designed EmergenTag, we provided just a big blank space for other information about your personal health conditions, because people do have, esoteric diseases and, genetic conditions and syndromes that even, you said, the first responders may not know it, but even the emergency room personnel may never have seen what you have. And
right.
So it's just an opportunity for anybody who has a complex medical situation to, in their own words or in their physician's own words, communicate that in a very straightforward way. In case of emergency, I have this condition, and this is what you need to know about me. Very important.
Right. So we're speaking with Jody Levine, the president and CEO of EmergenTag, about their new product. And we'll continue the conversation right after this message. Please stay with us and we'll be right back.
Von Hippel-Lindau disease, or VHL, is a genetic condition involving abnormal growth of tumors in some parts of the body. VHL occurs in every ethnic group worldwide. At this time, there's no cure, but research is helping those afflicted and their families learn how to manage their disease. When a family member has a tumor, it affects everyone in the family. VHL Alliance works to improve diagnosis, treatment, and the quality of life. Finding tumors early, getting the best treatment, and sharing information with others to help them cope is what VHL Alliance is all about. They're available to help lessen the stress of living with this lifetime chronic disease. Support the Cancer Research Fund of the VHL Alliance at VHL.org. That's Very Happy Life, VHL.org. 1-800-767-4-VHL.
We're back now speaking with Jody Levine.
We've said EmergenTag a couple of times. Why don't you explain to us what an EmergenTag is?
EmergenTag is a very simple device. It's a wearable, water-resistant USB flash drive. A lot of people carry flash drives these days to carry around all sorts of documents and
right. And for the uninitiated, a USB flash drive is one of those things with a little square plug that plugs into a computer, and it has a bunch of memory on it. So it's like putting another disk on, but it's really small. It's about a third the size of a lipstick. It's about the length of a lipstick, but flat and not that thick. So you can wear it almost like a piece of jewelry.
Our advice to our customers is to wear it, because in case of an emergency, you might have it, in your purse or clipped to a backpack, but you might get separated from your belongings in an accident or in another situation, and it won't do you any good if it's not with you. So we provide a lanyard, a fabric lanyard, to attach to the device to wear it.
And so it's sort of like a shoelace
exactly.
Thing around your neck with your EmergenTag on it. Or I suppose you could make it classier than that if you wanted to, wear it on a pretty chain or something.
Certainly.
But then how is that different from one of these bracelets, a medic alert bracelet?
A medic alert bracelet is it's kind of the traditional way of trying to communicate to folks in case of emergency, here's something you need to know about me. But it has very limited capabilities of communicating who you are, what your health conditions are, what medications you're on. And you might wear one because you're diabetic, or you might wear one because you're on Coumadin, or you might wear a bracelet that has your name on it. mm-hmm. but it wouldn't necessarily have the kinds of information that will be helpful in getting safer care in an emergency situation and in identifying you and your emergency contact. So the value of having Emergent Tag, which is loaded with software that we developed that allows for the user to very simply go through screens and enter a whole lot of information about themselves, although nothing that would facilitate identity theft, for instance. People are always concerned about that these days, and we're very sensitive to that. So it would have your name, and it would have an unlimited number of emergency contacts. So, for instance, your primary emergency contact might be your spouse, and our software allows you to designate a primary emergency contact. But what if your spouse isn't available? This device allows you to list an unlimited number of other people to contact should you be in an emergency situation. Same thing for physicians. It allows you to enter all the physicians that you see and that might treat multiple conditions in an individual, so that if you're admitted for a heart problem, your cardiologist's name would be in there. If you're admitted because you have a kidney problem, your nephrologist's name and contact information would be in there, plus all of your medications, not just Coumadin if you're on Coumadin, but all the other things you take, prescription and non-prescription, your allergies, because many people have drug allergies. Mm-hmm. So it's absolutely critical for physicians and nurses to know if you're allergic, for instance, to penicillin or sulfa.
Right.
So our device allows you in probably 10 or 15 minutes to load all that information about yourself, so that in case of an emergency, every piece of information, a large amount of information, is very easily accessible by paramedics, most of whom these days have laptops in the back of the ambulance, and in the emergency room.
Mm-hmm. But if they don't have a laptop in the back of the ambulance, they might need one of these lower tech ways of giving them just the highlights. Like, as you said, the Coumadin, or I have diabetes or something like that. So there might be a need both to have a bracelet and an Emergent Tag, et cetera.
I mean, I think that if folks are in a position to afford to have both, I certainly think that there's no harm in having a medical identification bracelet. And you're right, it is the traditional way of communicating a piece of information about you. So I think that if you're at high risk for a medical event or natural disaster, for that matter, I think of all our fellow citizens that live along the Gulf Coast that frequently get evacuated, mm-hmm. Then it makes very good sense to have a very low-tech, very easily accessible way of finding out the most important piece of medical information about you, and then have the Emergent Tag as a supplement to that, so that right. your loved ones can be contacted, your doctors can be contacted, your medications can be listed, etc.
And you said this has been tested for, you know, abusive situations. So, for example, if you're in a flood, or a fire or something, what's the chance that this is going to be destroyed?
Well, we have torture tested the device. So it has been put through a washer and dryer cycle because, most people like myself usually wind up having a dollar bill or a tissue or something like that in their pockets. And we know that things sometimes don't get emptied. So it survived the washer dryer cycle. We have frozen it in the freezer, in ice. Mm-hmm. We have soaked it in seawater for 3 days, and we have run it over with a car. It was a hybrid.
That sounds like a pretty good torture test. Yeah.
Yeah. So we have not fire tested it.
Okay.
The outside of the device is rubberized because it is water resistant.
Uh-huh.
So it's likely that would melt. The internal component is metal, but it's a pretty reliable, sturdy little thing. And I might also add that for travelers, and again, people who may be at high risk for a medical event, they're not necessarily sitting at home twiddling their thumbs. They're out and about, and they may be traveling on business or for fun or for family. This device, you can wear it under your clothing. That's what I do. It's very discreet, and it doesn't set off the metal detector at the airport.
That's good to know. One of the problems that happened during the hurricane is that people who were on chemotherapy all of a sudden had no medical records, and their hospital had been destroyed. So you couldn't just phone up and ask the doctor what medication was this person taking and what's the dosage that they're supposed to get. And so a lot of people were evacuated from New Orleans to Houston, where they had a very capable hospital at hand, but they didn't know what medication or what dose. So again, if you'd been wearing this bracelet, this device, and they could have recovered that information, then you would have been just fine. So the loss of medical records in certain kinds of disasters is definitely a problem.
Yeah, I mean, there's a big movement right now to move all medical records to an electronic medium so that won't happen anymore. But that's a very slow process, and the vast majority of doctors' offices and hospitals still keep paper records. Or if they do have records online, they're not accessible from outside the organization. So it is very, very important to have, again, not your whole medical record necessarily on your person, because, I mean, let's face it, in the event of an emergency, it's much less important when you had your last mammogram or what your cholesterol level is than what medications you're on or if you're allergic to penicillin.
Right.
So what we did in our process of designing the software was distill down that whole medical record, which for some people, myself included, might be several inches thick, to the most important pieces of information to help you in an emergency.
Right. It's like on one of those medical shows when they bring you in on a gurney, then the ambulance personnel rattle off a couple of sentences as a handoff. You know, all the salient information goes in just those few sentences to the emergency room doctor. So essentially, that's the kind of information that we're trying to transmit. What are the important salient details that need to get transmitted to the first responders? And if it's more than a paragraph or two, it's probably not what they need in that situation.
Right. Important things from my discussions with clinicians are some very high-level health history, like have you ever had a heart attack before or a stroke? That's important to know. And those medications are probably at the top of the list for...
Right. So you do inquiry with let's say I just bought this device, I sit down at the computer with your software, and it's going to ask me some of those pertinent questions. But it would seem to me that at some point we probably need a medical professional to say, that's more than we need right now. Let's distill this down. So I think I'm still thinking that at least for people with complex conditions, it would be good to have this discussion with their doctor and say, could you write me a paragraph? What would be the information you would want the emergency room people to know so that they treated me correctly in an emergency?
I think that's a great idea. What our software allows you to do is put as much information as you want and as you're comfortable with, because there are areas, for instance, in there to indicate whether or not you have advanced directives, for instance.
Right.
And if that's all of the fields in the database in our software are optional. So if you're not comfortable putting that in, some people just don't like to deal with that stuff, you don't have to, because really what's most important is just to make sure that if something happens to you, the people who are taking care of you know who you are and know enough about you to keep you safe. And it's easy enough to navigate that even if you put in lots of information about yourself, the first responders, the physicians, the nurses who are looking at your information in an emergency will be able to look at the highlights really quickly.
Right. The temptation sometimes is to write your whole life story, but remember that's not the goal here.
Exactly.
The goal here is just that quick handoff. what is it that they really need to know? If they're only going to read the first three sentences, then you want in those three sentences for them to get the gist of it.
Exactly. But for other folks, and because we understand that, you know, the people are in different situations, we did allow for some extra information to be entered for people who are comfortable having that. We have a field in there for clergy contact. So there are some folks for whom it will be very important that their clergy is notified if something happens to them.
Mm-hmm.
That's their support system. That's important to their value system. So we entered that. You know, we added that to the database. So if you're comfortable doing that, if that's important to you, you enter it. If it's not, you don't have to. And so there are several pieces of information that are like that, that are kind of added to Emergent Tag just for comfort reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's an important thing too for peace of mind, which
right.
is not an insignificant or irrelevant component of what we're trying to accomplish with this product and what people who are either caregivers or people at risk need.
Right. Now, you mentioned security earlier. Let me just pursue that a little bit, because people are rightfully concerned about security. So let's say that a thief steals my Emergent Tag. Mm-hmm. The three pieces of information they need in order to steal your identity are your name, your Social Security number, and your birth date. And these pieces of information are things that frequently are on our medical records. So tell me what is or is not available on the Emergent Tag.
There is no field in the Emergent Tag for Social Security number. We intentionally left that out for exactly the reasons that we're chatting about.
Usually your name plus your birth date is enough to uniquely identify you. There are situations, however, where if you have a very common name, then name and birth date might not be enough. So you might want to put things like the hospital ID number, but not your Social Security number.
Right. Plus, we do have the capability of having the user upload a photo of themselves, so that if somebody is, let's say, in a multi-car accident and the Emergent Tag gets separated from the person, that you can plug it in. The first thing you see is who that belongs to. There's a picture.
Right.
Thank you very much, Jody, for sharing all this good information with us about Emergent Tag. Please go to powerfulpatient.org and look at the program guide that goes with this show, where you'll find the website for Emergent Tag. And actually, if you buy an Emergent Tag through the Powerful Patient website, we will get a small donation from them. So please consider it as part of your emergency preparedness plan. And next week, we're going to talk with Beth Dworetsky from Family Voices. She's going to tell us how to discover what services are available for people with special needs in your own state and how to go about applying for them and getting the benefit of them. So have a great week, and I hope you'll be with us next time. And meanwhile, be well and be a powerful patient. Thank you.